40 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago on the 11th vote in the U.S. House.
A speaker has not been elected.
There are GOP holdouts, including Colorado's Lauren Boebert. More from CBS's Nicole Killian.
Some of McCarthy's backers feel the party's being taken hostage by the demands of a few. As negotiations took place behind closed doors, far-right members appeared unmoved.
It is not happening. And as it's been said, we need to get to a point where we start evaluating what life after Kevin McCarthy looks like.
Sure. And at least one dissenter, Florida's Matt Gaetz, cast his vote for the former president.
Donald John Trump.
In California, a state of emergency remains in effect with tens of thousands still without power after heavy rains and catastrophic flooding after two storms since last weekend. The death toll is at least six. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti in Sacramento County.
Already swollen rivers now overflowing, while raging creeks are prompting numerous rescues. Just too much rain on already saturated ground. San Francisco normally gets 4.5 inches of rain for the entire month of January. They've nearly tripled that amount in less than a week.
Buffalo Bills safety Damar Hamlin has started to communicate with his family and doctors after going into cardiac arrest on the field Monday night. Doctors say it appears his neurological function is intact, and the Bills head coach Sean McDermott says they felt a lot of support this week.
The news has been very encouraging as we all are up to date at this point, and just extremely grateful.
New evidence is disclosed in the case of Brian Koberger, the man accused of killing four University of Idaho students. CBS's Steve Futterman.
Unsealed court documents indicate Brian Koberger's DNA was found on the leather covering of a knife recovered at the home where the four students were killed. The release of the documents took place as the suspect made his first appearance in court. The charges against him were read, as were the potential penalties.
The maximum penalty for this offense is death or imprisonment for life. Do you understand?
Yes. Prosecutors say they believe Koberger intended to commit murder when he entered the home, but they have not said a thing about a possible motive. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
Authorities in Enoch, Utah say a man killed his five children, mother-in-law, and wife before turning the gun on himself after his wife had filed for divorce. Enoch Mayor Jeffrey Chest says the close-knit community is in shock.
This is a tremendous blow to many, many families who have spent many, many nights with these individuals who are now gone.
This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Madner with your headlines. Mail theft a growing problem in Wisconsin and across the country. Last week, Wauwatosa police found bags of stolen mail inside a vehicle that crashed during a police chase. WISN News spoke with a national president of the Postal Police Officers Union. Frank Albergo says mail theft is spreading like wildfire and the Postal Inspection Service isn't doing much to fight it. Thieves get a hold of stolen letter carrier master keys, which can open any box in the zip code, including inside apartment buildings. Thieves are especially looking for checks, which can be sold online or washed to commit bank fraud. Wisconsin's GOP delegation in Washington continues backing Kevin McCarthy for Speaker of the House. After 2 days of voting, the California Republican still does not have the needed 218 votes. A group of around 20 members of the far-right Freedom Caucus continue opposing McCarthy's elevation to Speaker. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 a.m. 101 FM, The Shaw.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station. The Shaw, 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls, always streaming at WAUK Radio.
Miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So while the fun and entertainment is going on, day three of the debacle. Hey, and good congratulations, Kevin McCarthy. As I said, you're going to go down in history. 0-11. 0-11. And tomorrow's not going to be any better for you, so sleep well. A couple of stories not getting much attention. I'm looking at this George Santos. This would be a bigger story. George Santos should be very happy that all this craziness is going on. Because he would be front and center on all the news, not so much now, but the representative-elect from New York, evidently on his website, is claiming that he voted against the House omnibus bill back in December of 2022. Yet, oddly enough, he's only been in Congress now 3 days. I guess that's just one more in the slew of imagination. This fantasy world that he's created for himself. And that's a representative. Fun. Here to share some thoughts on the fun and entertainment we're seeing in Congress. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I'm watching the entertainment. I'm watching the fun there. Got enough popcorn. So, yeah, there we are.
So the thing about George Santos is he's not actually even sworn in yet. Like he's just still a congressman elect.
Right.
Nobody has been sworn into office. So they're not technically members of Congress. I wonder if they're actually getting paid for this time.
Yes, they get paid on the first day. It doesn't matter whether they're sworn in. This was somebody already asked. Now their staff. Their staff. No, not so much.
They're going to be screwed. And the constituents, like I think it was Tom Cole we talked to this week, who said, "Yeah, we're kind of working behind the scenes with people that are calling our offices anyway." But there are a bunch of other members who are saying that they can't work with constituents. So I'm not sure what the story is there. I mean, the George Santos thing. I mean, I don't know why Kevin McCarthy cares about the speakership. George Santos is going to claim he was the speaker this whole time anyway.
It's amazing to me that this guy got through an election process.
I know.
That even the Republicans didn't vet. How is it? Because now we're seeing all of the stories and you're going, man, how do you get away with, does nobody Google this guy?
I mean, that's the big thing that I remember when Howard Dean talked about the 50 state strategy. And Chris Van Hollen really focused on how they needed to have a candidate in every single congressional race. And even if it was a race that was never in a million years going to get won by a Democrat,
yeah.
When you have races like that, you have people legitimately who should be doing a Google every once in a while. And, you know, it is such a huge failure on the part of New York, but there are a lot of failures that happen in the state of New York. So.
You think?
Right.
But, you know, I look at this guy and I'm going, you know, how did the Republicans not even vet their own? Because this. Wow.
Nobody wants him. Nobody wants to sit with him. Like, nobody wants to be anywhere near him.
Well, Lauren Boebert cozied up. There's a picture of him and Lauren Boebert all cozied up. I guess she thought someone's going to be taking the pictures. So she, you know, kind of photobombed in there.
Well, hell, he got more votes than she did. Of course she's going to. Like, the thing that blows my mind about this whole thing is we're watching Lauren Boebert, who barely won her election. She won by, like, 550 votes. And she's walking around Congress like she owns the place. And it's like, no, honey, no. You really, really came close to failing. And then she's palling around with Matt Gaetz, who's, you know, we're waiting to figure out, is he going to end up in being charged by the Justice Department?
Yeah, I've given up on that hope. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, come on already. Move this along.
Right?
You know, I said earlier that, you know, maybe the only way that Gaetz votes for McCarthy is if, you know, McCarthy gives up his teenage daughters. I think that's the only way he gets that vote.
Oh, gross. But you know what's funny is, so one of the Republicans who did not want to be named, but who is about to become a committee chair, said to us, "Hey, what are you guys doing about that whole Gaetz trafficking thing? Can't you get some more info on that out there? Because we gotta get rid of this guy."
So this is an interesting question. At what point do the 200 Republicans that keep voting for McCarthy look at these 20, you know, like my congressman, Scott, pardon me, Perry, and go, you know, it's time to purge the crazy? At what point do they do that?
That has been this overarching question in the Republican Party, right? Like, this is what's been going on, and we've been building to this point for, what, 15, 20 years now, since at least, you know, 2002, 2004, since the era of the evangelical vote and all these right-wing nutters and the Tea Party. I mean, this has been building for so long, and it's gone from John Boehner having to deal with these idiots and then Paul Ryan having to deal with them. And now, you know, they really have taken over the caucus. And I mean, they're talking about this compromise being possible. They're never going to compromise with those hardline five.
No.
They're not going to get anywhere. I don't know what Kevin thinks that he's going to do to be able to move them. I don't know how many votes. I mean, maybe he's just thinking if he holds enough votes that
they'll get tired.
Somebody will be in the bathroom. Yeah, like they'll basically just get tired and be like, for the love of God, finally. But these five, they're never going to do that. That's the thing. And his only hope really is that somebody's going to be in the bathroom. Or somebody's going to be like, there's a guy in Oklahoma, an Oklahoma Republican who has to go home because his mother died and he's got to go to her funeral on Saturday. But you know, that's a McCarthy vote. That guy was a McCarthy vote. So these are not helping him. He needs Democrats to just be, you know, MIA, because otherwise we're going to get Hakeem Jeffries.
You know, there's part of me, I gotta be honest. There's a slim part of me. And I said this last year. That I want Kevin McCarthy to be speaker. I want him to get everything that he deserves. I want those 20 people to be what he thinks about when he wakes up in the morning. I want those 20 people to be what he thinks about when he goes to bed at night. I want those 20 people dancing around in his nightmares, causing him heartburn and heartache for every moment that he's speaker until they eventually throw him out because he doesn't do exactly what they want him to do. That's what I want for Kevin. But that's going to be anybody. And I think the Wall Street Journal, you know, their editorial board had the right response. You know, who's crazy enough to be speaker for the Republicans right now? I can't imagine who'd want the job.
Exactly. Like who would dare to get into this with these crazy right wingers that they have to appease? And the only thing you really can do is, I think, form an alliance with Democrats and Republicans to be able to, you know, hold them down. And there's no Republican that's going to be able to appeal to a Democrat. And there's no Democrat that Republicans are going to be willing to accept. So it's like, I mean, they really are at a standstill, and we aren't even to legislation yet. Like, yeah. We're 8 months away from the debt ceiling, and that's going to be a complete, you know, crap show.
Oh yeah, this is going to make this look like, you know, look like a fun at the beach, because yeah. Isn't that what this is really about, though? I mean, you look at all the concessions that McCarthy is giving. You know, everything you can imagine. Kevin McCarthy's going, whatever, my soul, you can have it. You know, first male born or female born, whatever, you will take it all. Here's my wife, please. Who was that? Was it Henny Youngman? I think. Take my wife, please.
Yeah.
No, but you know, this is what he's done. And again, I want the speakership for him.
I know. One of the Democrats, Brad Sherman, talked to us today, and he said, you know, I'm not actually worried about what they end up passing, because it won't matter for the next 2 years. You know, if it's a crazy right-wing bill, it's not going to go through the Senate.
Right.
And there's no way in hell Joe Biden's going to sign something like that. At the same time, if McCarthy wants to bring all these amendments to the floor, he's like, you know, tally-ho, because whatever Kevin McCarthy's going to vote against, Democrats are going to vote against too. So again, like, none of this is going to pass. What Sherman said he's really concerned about is what is being blocked here. You know, what about the debt ceiling? What about these bills? God forbid there's a war that breaks out, right? Like something crazy happens with Russia. What happens when we legitimately need Congress to function and it can't? And that is the piece of this where it's just like, we are, you know, we better hope that 2 years goes and nothing really terrible happens, because there's nothing that Kevin's going to be able to do.
No, nothing the Republicans, and what the Republicans are showing us right now is they don't know how to govern, and mm-hmm. they're not interested in governing, that they're yeah. not interested in leading or legislating. They're more interested in, you know, going on Hannity and mm-hmm. you know, and on the podcast circuit and raising their star. That's not a good place for a country to be.
It's funny that you say it like that too, because Scott Perry almost missed one of the votes because he was too busy talking to Fox News, and somebody had to like drag him out of the lobby being like, you need to vote. And he's like, dude, I'm getting there. Give me a minute. And he almost missed it. I think it was like the eighth vote. I forget. There's been so many.
It wouldn't matter. He still didn't have the votes. I mean, and this is where this all becomes just performative at this point. So yeah. How long do you think this goes? Do you think how many losses does Kevin McCarthy rack up? And also, how many losses does Donald Trump rack up?
That's an excellent question. How much of this is Donald Trump willing to allow to go on and continue to look like an idiot? Because, you know, he put out this big message saying, I support Kevin McCarthy. All of my people need to support Kevin McCarthy. And the votes didn't change. So Trump has basically proven that he has no power over any of his members of Congress anymore. At least as it comes to this. And, interestingly, Gates talked to some of the print reporters just briefly this afternoon and said, I'm willing to go till the cherry blossoms fall, which, you know, but that's end of March, yeah. beginning of April.
Wow.
So, I mean, holy crap. If we can't have a functioning government for 3 months or more, but again, like, this is sort of indicative of what I feel like Republicans have been for a long time, where, you know, again, like, they claimed they were going to repeal and replace, but all they could do was repeal because they didn't have a replacement. Like, again, over and over again, they should have these policies or these bills or laws that are ready that back up the stuff that they've been saying, but they never do. They never can really make good on all of the promises that they give to people. And that's sort of what happened in the election, is that people may have sort of held their nose and voted for a couple of them, but they certainly didn't give them a mandate. And now they're seeing, you know, what that looks like for Republicans to have control.
And this is, you know, this is Trump era forward. There's no policy. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that there was no platform for the 2020 election season, you know, whatever Donald wants, we'll do it. And Donald didn't want anything. They moved no mm-hmm. significant legislation other than a tax handout to the very wealthy. They have no way of making lives better, but they spin a nice yarn. They sell a nice narrative. You know, the Democrats are evil. We're going to make things all better. You're going to be okay, but we're not going to tell you how until you give us the mantle. Well, they've got the mantle. They've got the power. And look what they're doing with it. Exactly what we knew they were going to do.
And what we told people.
Yes.
Like, I feel like we've been telling people this for a long time now, and you know, I think that's one of the main reasons that they didn't do as well in the election, is people are wising up to it. They're like, yeah, we've seen this movie before.
Yeah. So let me ask you.
It doesn't end well.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Sarah Burris. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Make sure you check out the work she does there. How come we haven't heard any of the election denial stuff, that the votes are rigged? How come we haven't heard any of that stuff yet? I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for Rudy Giuliani or one of those. No, no, McCarthy won in a landslide. They've rigged the election. Any of that?
You know, I think it's probably because they're too busy fighting each other on the floor and slinging insults and trying to get their 5 minutes of floor time. And, you know, this isn't just happening on C-SPAN where somebody, you know, actually has to say who they're voting for out loud. They're showing it on CNN and Fox News and MSNBC, too. So America really is watching this. And, you know, it's like I think normal people obviously don't watch C-SPAN, right? Like, we're weird because we're into stuff like that. But, you know, America's actually watching this. Our traffic on our website, people are glued to watching this and figuring out what in the hell is going on. Because I think folks have never really seen this before.
No, I mean, it's remarkable. And, you know, the thing is, you know, I don't know how many of Scott, pardon me, Perry's constituents actually saw him give his speech, you know, invoking Frederick Douglass and the Civil War reconstruction. But, you know, there he was in all his glory.
Oh, God. So shameless. I mean, come on, man. He's so disgusting. And this idea that this is something that I feel like keeps happening over and over again, where Republicans like to pretend like they're the party that defeated slavery. And it's like, what are you doing now? You know, how are you helping people of color now? Pretty sure you wanted to put everybody in jail for the summer protests in 2020, right?
Yeah. But, you know, in talking about Scott, pardon me, Perry, you know, one of the other things to be concerned about is, you know, the 2024 presidential election. They floated an idea. Mm-hmm. You know, the Trump people floated an idea of letting the House of Representatives decide who the president's going to be. Do you see this as an undercurrent as well that's not being talked about as much?
I do think that people need to be talking about that a little bit more. And I know that Democrats on the Hill are actually thinking about that and they are concerned about it. They've told us that, you know, this is something that we really should be thinking about in terms of Republicans are taking control of the House. And yes, it's a narrow majority, but what do we do? You know, if in 2024 they decide, you know, we're going to stop this election from being, you know, if Joe Biden is reelected, they're just going to say, nope, we're not moving forward with this. What do you do? And I think that basically takes the insurrection to the next level. And we haven't had that conversation. We've talked about January 6th and the violence and all of the things that Trump did and who he coordinated with and Justice Department and yada, yada, yada. But we really have not talked about as a country, like, what happens? What do we do if this happens again? What do we do when Congress, if a Republican Congress stands up and says, what, you know, we're not certifying this election? And I don't know. I mean, I think that obviously it goes to the Supreme Court and this ends up in a big lawsuit, but then you have one branch of government against the other. And so this is, I mean, it really is a constitutional crisis. They've been talking about it for years now, but it could legitimately happen with Republicans in control of Congress now.
Thanks, Republicans. I mean, I don't know what else to say. You know,
this is gerrymandering too. Like, a lot of these people got elected because of gerrymandering, and so, like, these are ways to disenfranchise voters and make the average American less powerful than they should be.
And, you know, as I've been saying, you know, what we're seeing is none of these people are going to pay a price. I mean, you know, Scott, pardon me, Perry's not going to lose an election in this district. It's just not going to happen. None of these people, you know, Boebert may be down the road, but, you know, who knows? They're not going to pay a political price. And I think Boebert wants to be on Fox News anyway. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, you know, we're in this spot where, you know, what they're doing is exactly what they've been saying they want to do. And it's not going to hurt them. There are no consequences for them. They're not legislating. They're not doing any oversight. They're not making lives better. They're simply proving their own narrative that government is corrupt and broken and can't get anything accomplished. In fact, that's what Scott, pardon me, Perry said the other day, that they're corrupt and it's broken, and then went on to prove that they can't get anything done.
And I think, too, like, there are these Republicans who are just anti-government, and they've wanted to basically just stop government from working. And So basically, they've won, right? Like, they have stopped government from working, and these 20 people who are essentially anarchists, they're insurrectionists, and they're trying to basically just stop the government. I think that they have shown that they can do it with just 20 of them.
So let's move this in wrap up and finally maybe a positive direction. You know, is there is there a way that this could be, I don't know, a way that people go, because in a functional democracy, this wouldn't happen. You would have, you know, some Democrats who go, no, we don't like McCarthy. You pick Fitzpatrick or Gallagher or someone else, and put them up, and we'll vote along with some rational Republicans, and we'll move forward because we all believe that, you know, the wheels have to turn, you know, the bus has to move. In a functional democracy, that's how it would work. Is there a possibility of that again, maybe someday, possibly?
I think the only way that this works is Kevin McCarthy agrees that he's not going to run anymore. That's the only way that he makes the five, that he appeases the five. And I don't know if that means Steve Scalise or, you know, somebody even further to the right. But it can't be McCarthy. And he has not come to that realization, or he's not willing to come to it yet. I don't know how many votes it's going to take before he finally is willing to admit defeat. It's very clear that he does not care about being humiliated. I feel like we've spent the last 2 years of Kevin McCarthy being completely humiliated, and this is not enough for him. So,
No, you've hit that spot on the head. Yeah, there doesn't seem to be much self-awareness there. And remember, this was the guy who was one of the young guns, was it?
With Cantor, the young guns, and
Paul Ryan.
Cantor,
they wrote that book.
Ryan, yeah, Cantor and Ryan, and who else? There was somebody else, but yeah, they were supposed to. All of them really wanted to be speaker, and then, you know, Paul Ryan did, and Cantor rose to the leadership, and then basically just got cut off at the knees. And now it's basically Kevin McCarthy's dream. And he's literally willing to give away everything, including the speakership. Like, he's been saying, okay, you can vote me out. I'll give you every possibility that one person can just bring a motion to the floor to vote me out. Just for the love of God, let me be the speaker. And it just seems like he's willing to be neutered just to get the job. And that just seems so counterintuitive. But again, like, I don't get what his motive is here.
Yeah,
other than having the title. Like, is it just the title? Can we just make him an honorary speaker so he'll shut up and move on? I don't know.
Like Speaker Emeritus or something like that.
Right, yeah.
Stick him in the corner.
Like,
give him a plastic gavel.
Star. We'll give him a plastic gavel. A little sparkly scar, a little sparkly star sticker, and that he can be the sticker speaker.
Give him one of those toy gavels or something like that. One that makes squeaky noises when you hit it on the table.
There you go. Squeak, squeak. He can bang squeak, squeak all he wants.
Because you remember when he said that, you know, it's going to be hard for him not to hit Nancy Pelosi with the gavel when she gives it to him. It would be funnier with the squeaky one.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, and also given the fact that Pelosi's husband got hit with a hammer, I think that's probably not going to go over very well in public. So,
kind of forgot that.
Yeah.
But here again, and let's finish on this. Because you got, you know, Fanone, the officer that on January 6th who was attacked, sent a letter to a bunch of them saying, "Hey, maybe now's a good time to tell people to stop."
Yeah. And he's right. He's absolutely right. But he sent it to people who don't want to stop. They want this to continue. They want more violence. They want more, you know, people standing up to America for American democracy and whatever the hell else. And it's just not the kind of you know, thoughtful democratic value that these folks have.
Well, you know, Lauren Boebert was on Hannity last night, and she showed off her GED education and
and definition. She hacked off Hannity. Like, that's the thing, is she's hacking off her own people, and I'm like, damn, you got some principles there.
Let the fun begin. But Sarah, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff.
My pleasure. Good to be back. Happy New Year to everybody.
You as well. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out the website, rawstory.com. for all the wonder.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. House members reconvene at noon Eastern tomorrow to try for a fourth day to select a Republican speaker. Several conservative members have refused to vote for GOP leader Kevin McCarthy. More from CBS's Scott McFarlane.
This group of 20 has a whole myriad of concerns. They don't speak with one singular voice, and their concerns are not synchronized. So Kevin McCarthy doesn't have a silver bullet way of getting 16 of 20 back in his camp.
At least six people in California, including a toddler, have died in major rain and wind storms since last weekend, and more storms are on the way this weekend. Seven members of a family, including five children, are dead. Authorities in Enoch, Utah, say that a man killed everyone before turning the gun on himself after his wife had filed for divorce. Enoch Mayor Jeffrey Chess.
It's not too often something like this hits very close to home. In fact, the Hates were my neighbors. The youngest children played in my yard with my sons.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. A group of people running for village board in Mount Pleasant is looking to oust Foxconn supporters. Village officials continue to back the Taiwan-owned electronics factory, even though it hasn't met its publicly stated goals about building, hiring, or output. Back in 2017, Foxconn promised to create 13,000 jobs, but at this point only about 1,000 people work there. Foxconn has gotten $37 million from Wisconsin taxpayers. Governor Evers says getting more state money to local governments is one of his priorities for the new year. He had sit-down meetings with the mayors of Milwaukee, Madison, Racine, Green Bay, and Kenosha yesterday. They talked about how to invest in local governments. In sports, the Bucks beat Toronto last night 104-101. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates, because freedom.
But Dom, we've been following a couple of big stories this week. Truck convoy leader has no idea where he is and is driving in circles around I-495. He didn't know precisely where he was going anyways or where he was at the time. Apparently, he put the convoy back on the road, headed back up north, and he's back in Scranton. So
I totally would have protested this tyranny, but damn, the traffic was so bad.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, on Wednesday, President Biden was in Kentucky touting the bipartisan infrastructure bill that's going to bring massive investment to communities across the country. And Kentucky, and I said this yesterday, and I took a lot of heat for it, but, you know, politically, I got to be honest, there's part of me that goes, you know, the former guy, he would have never taken money to a state he lost. But good on Biden. This is a major, this bridge that he was out in front of, a major economic driver for both the Cincinnati and the Covington, Kentucky area. But out, you know, saying, hey, look, we've got to reinvest in our country, rebuild our infrastructure. Good stuff. And here to share some thoughts on, well, how we do this in a smart way, how we do this in a way that's going to help you, me, the working people of this country. I've asked Steve Knowles to come talk with us. Steve is the president of the Bricklayers and Allied Craftworkers Local 4. They're in Indiana and Kentucky. Their website, baclocal4.org, if you want to check out the work that they do. Steve, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So, thoughts on the president coming to you, to Kentucky and saying, look, we need to start rebuilding this stuff and, you know, upgrading, investing. Any thoughts?
Yes, we were very excited to have him come in there and very excited with the investments that they've made, not only in the bridges, but a number of other projects in the area.
Now, look, there's a lot of investment happening. And we were talking during the break about the fact that, you know, you've got car battery plants being built, Columbus, Ohio, seeing a massive, you know, the Intel chip plant being built. There's all of this resurgence of going, hey, you know, we should make stuff here. We should build stuff. Something I've been screaming about for, all 18 years I've been doing this program.
Absolutely.
So the question then becomes, how do we use this moment to rebuild and revive the working class and to use this opportunity to create the kind of jobs that your members, that working people need and deserve? How do we do that?
Well, a lot of that work is done under national agreements, and they call for Davis-Bacon wages and benefits, and that's going to bring everybody up. It's going to improve their lifestyle. It's going to help our apprenticeship programs, and it's going to put a steady flow of income in a lot of people's pockets.
Hey, you threw out a couple of things there. Davis-Bacon. A lot of people don't know what that is. Explain it.
That was a law that was put into effect. I think the Davis-Bacon Act of 1931 says any federally funded jobs over $2,000 you will have to pay a area standard wage for that area and a benefit package to the people performing the work.
And why is that important?
Well, that's important because it brings a great income into the families of these working people that on other projects may not be able to command that wage through probably unscrupulous bidding processes that have worker misclassification involved. But the bottom line is it brings everybody up. It stabilizes the economy. It brings money in. It helps the unions because those wages are usually set by the unions because they have set the area standards. And it helps a rising tide brings all ships up. And it brings all economies up. And that's what, doesn't everybody want the American dream, healthcare and a great pension plan and a great wage and the ability to take your family on vacation and do wonderful things and not be strapped by economic issues?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the reality is, and the hope here is that we get this. But sadly, when you start talking about Davis-Bacon or prevailing wage, which are synonymous, you know, politically, we've been put into boxes. Where, you know, most Republicans seem to be hell-bent against prevailing wage. And in fact, a lot of red states have gone and done away with prevailing wage. And some of the things that we've seen is when they take prevailing wage. Well, let me ask you, what happens in a state when they go and they destroy their prevailing wage laws?
Okay, it happened right here in our state. And I tell you what happens. It creates an atmosphere where the contractors have to compete against each other in unscrupulous ways by misclassifying their employees for one as independent contractors and they illegally do so. And by doing that, they call them independent contractors. So they do not have to pay any taxes on them. It's a tax fraud in a way. They don't pay any Social Security taxes, unemployment insurance. It drives people to entitlements later in life because they don't pay health care. They don't have to pay into a retirement plan.
Yeah, what we know is, look, there have been numerous studies on this, and I look at the ones that the professor out at the University of Idaho did. When states did away with their prevailing wages, what happened is wages went down. You ended up losing your local construction trades. Those tradespeople went other places, sought other well-paying jobs, and you ended up getting transient labor coming through and doing shoddy work. And, oh, by the way, it didn't save you any money. And I point to Jim Justice, the governor of West Virginia, who said, hey, we did what we were supposed to do. We passed the no rights at work. We passed ending prevailing wage. And what did it get us? Nothing. And this, again, it's this... this false medicine that they keep trying to shove down our throat, this poison that, oh, it's going to be good for us. It's not good for working people. It's good for, well, the very wealthy.
Yeah, absolutely, Rick. Wages and benefits are the foundation for every economy in every city out there. And if you drive them down, you drive down your solid structure, you're the foundation of your economy and of your cities, it deteriorates. And we all know that wages and benefits brings everything up to a higher level and a higher standard.
And also, you know, look, I've said for a while, Steve, and you're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Steve Knowles. He's the president of the Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers Union Local 4 in Indiana, Kentucky. Check out their website, baclocal4.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. But, you know, we're in this kind of moment where, you know, there's so much anger out there. And I've made the argument that one of the things that Trump tapped into is that working class anger that when we grew up, we believed the idea that if you worked hard, you played by the rules, you got ahead. Well, sadly, people are working hard, they're playing by the rules, but the game have been kind of rigged and people aren't getting ahead. And this is one of those ways for me, at least, to go, you know what, if you're willing to go out there and work in the cold, you're willing to do these hard physical labor jobs, we should make sure you earn a living wage, something you're going to be able to support your family. And it's something, hey, you're going to have health and retirement security down the road. It used to be common sense, Steve. Doesn't seem to be that way much anymore, at least politically.
Yeah, I don't get it. We spend so much time educating the public and we're making inroads, don't get me wrong. We have to cross party lines, and we're more willing to do that as long as people are willing to let us educate them about the good things that we do here in the union, the benefits that we do provide, so people aren't driven to entitlements later in life and taxpayers end up paying for that. And our apprenticeship programs, Earn While You Learn, they're free. It's 4 years of training, and you get to earn while you're doing it. And We're reaching into the high schools now, and we've almost, in some cases, we do have a current curriculum where they can directly step out of high school into one of our programs. But right now we are in a process of getting a certificate to where the high schools start the program and they step directly into our apprentice programs right as they graduate. And that's really picking up some traction because college isn't for everyone. No. And we're going to give them another path to a great area standard wage and a benefit so that they aren't seeking entitlements.
No, I mean, here's the thing, Steve, and you were probably around the same age. I remember when I was in high school, these were coveted spots. I mean, getting into the building trades apprenticeship program was you knew you're going to do well. You're going to live a good life. You're going to work hard, but you were going to make a good living and have a good retirement. And we've been told over the last 30 years that no, we don't need to do those work jobs. We can all have corner offices. We all go get degrees. And sadly, we've lost a lot of people who have the ability to work with their hands and do this kind of stuff. It seems to now be in vogue again. And I think it's a good thing because we do have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of becoming back in vogue. And I'm telling you what, we've worked really, really hard to bring that back after the tech boom and all the high school counselors and everyone sent everyone to tech. And now my young daughters can do more on an iPhone than they learned in 4 years, and they're strapped with lots and lots of debt. And these jobs we provide are good jobs, and people, it's coming back around. Now the counselors are calling us back, and we're lined up. We're doing more career fairs and more promotions and job expos than we've ever done in the past. And that's all part of the public education and the service-minded kind of person you become when you're in a position like mine.
No, that's fantastic. And so you look, and this is the other part of this. And I go back to Biden being in Kentucky. And look, the administration is doing a lot of outreach to point out that they're doing massive investments across the country. Do we have enough skilled tradespeople? Does the BAC, the Bricklayers Union, do they have enough people to do what's coming? I mean, like you said a moment ago, there's a battery plant coming in your state, the chip plant in Ohio. There's massive numbers of new manufacturing starts, all of the bridges that need to be done, all of the infrastructure that needs. Do we have enough people yet?
I'm going to say, Rick, we don't, but we are organizing every day. We're signing new people up and we're bringing new people in and we're training craft workers at a very high rate. And we're going to get there. The boom isn't quite peaked. And we're not exactly at full employment, but we're going to be, and we're going to be looking, but we're training to fill those positions every day right now and working really hard. I mean, this is our opportunity. The Infrastructure and Jobs Act and the CHIPS Act and all this building and construction that's going on out there. This is our time to shine.
Yeah.
And we're doing it. We're going to man these jobs up, and it's going to be a lot of work, but just the ability for that work to be there is a true asset to us to be able to go out and organize and talk to these counselors and these kids and say, we have jobs, because when there isn't jobs, it's hard to organize.
No, it's and look, we're in a great moment. If you're an 18, 19 year old right now, this is a good time because this is a job where, as you pointed out a minute ago, and when I talk about apprenticeship programs, it's always you don't pay them, they pay you to learn a skill that's portable, that you can leave in 5 or 6 or 10 years and go do something else, but you'll always have that skill. It's a good thing. Like my son has said he wants to get into one of the building trades, and we're going to try and get him into one of the programs there, because he's going, look, college isn't, the return on investment isn't there yet, maybe down the road, but right now the apprenticeship program is the best gig in the box. So let me ask you this, kind of the last line of questioning, because we've been talking about the jobs that are being created. Why does that matter to somebody who's not a construction worker or in the trades? Why does it matter? I mean, what does it matter to communities to have, a local building trades, a local skilled trade? Why does that matter?
Well, I think what you're asking me is the value of the construction force in any city or economy. Can you reframe that question?
I mean, what good is it to have a local skilled trades group in your area? I argue this. When they built the school down the road from my house, my kids' school, when they rebuilt the local school, did I want a transient crew to come through and slap some halfway done shoddy job up to get it done and get down the road and collect their money? Or do I want somebody whose kid is sitting next to my kid building that roof, knowing that his kid's going to be sitting under that roof? For me, that's why I want a local trade. But there are 1,000 other reasons. You want people who are making good wages so they're part of the community, so they can coach soccer and do all of the things that we want with active, engaged folks. There's a ton of stuff.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Absolutely. We want it. For one, we want local people doing it all, because that's part of the local economy. And that drives all small business and large business alike, as the wages and the benefits that are in that community. On top of that, it's just a driver for the entire economy.
Yep.
Of that area to be able to self-perform and know that you're going to get the quality that these people doing the work were in those apprenticeship programs we were talking about, and they are trained properly to give your schools and your libraries and your shops and whatever type of construction you're in is being done right. That's a lot too.
No, absolutely. And the other part of this, and the other thing I like to bring up is that dollar that your member makes, that good, decent wage, that stays local. So the local shopkeepers, the local business people, that reverberates through the local economy. That money stays local and it helps build up everyone. As you said a moment ago, the rising tide thing. It's that.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Yep.
Final thought, Steve?
No, thanks for having me, and appreciate it. And it's been a good talk.
Good stuff. I appreciate the time. Steve Knowles, he is the president of the Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers Local 4 there, Indiana, Kentucky. You can check out their website, baclocal4.org. We will certainly get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the top. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this date in labor history, the year was 1914. The Ford Motor Company raised its basic wage from $2.40 for a 9-hour day to $5 for an 8-hour workday. Many of Ford's contemporary critics scorned his $5 day. Journalists and other automakers predicted disaster for the industry. Henry Ford implemented the wage increase to head off labor unrest in the company and to curtail his problems with worker turnover. The wage increase helped to derail efforts to start a union in his factory. The $5 day was not an act of altruism by the automaker. It was a calculated business decision. Most importantly for Ford, the wage increase enabled his workers to become customers and buy cars of their own. Ford declared, "One's own employees ought to be one's own best customers." Despite the prognosticators of doom, Ford's plan worked. Ford's profits doubled in the 2 years after he raised the wages. In 1914, Ford sold more than 300,000 Model Ts, more than all other U.S. automakers combined. By 1920, that number had climbed to 1 million cars a year. Reflecting back on his decision, Ford explained, "The payment of $5 for an 8-hour workday was one of the finest cost-cutting moves we ever made. If the minimum wage is increased, perhaps those who today are lining up to predict doom and disaster if the minimum wage is increased might benefit from reading this page from Labor's History." Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something in your mind, email me. Rick at therickssmithshow.com. Look, you know, I go back to this building trades thing. And look, I've encouraged my son to look into going into one of the apprenticeship programs and learning a skilled trade, because it's one of the best bargains out there. It really is. You're going to learn how to do something. They're going to pay you to do it. And then you're going to make good money while you're doing it. And, you know, there's almost a no lose in that. And the job you're going to have is going to give you a skill that's portable. You know, I know a lot of my building trades friends. Yeah, they've got their main job, but they do a lot of side work. They eventually start their own businesses. There's a lot that come out of this. But for me, more importantly, it comes back down to ensuring that you have the local. And as you know, anybody who's listened to this program knows I'm a believer in local. I'm a believer in, you know, domestic production for domestic consumption, you know, is close to home as you can get. And building stuff, that's one of those key things. And as I said a minute ago, you know, the reality is I want the guy putting the roof on that school my kid's going to sit in. I want his kid sitting next to mine, because he's going to take a little extra care to make sure it's done right. He's going to take some time and ensure that it doesn't fall in. Interesting story. We were coming back from our vacation, and I swung by and visited a friend who is building a home in North Carolina. And he'd lived most of his life in West Virginia, and he's mind blown at the difference between the builders in North Carolina and in West Virginia. I go, "Well, you should come to Pennsylvania and see, or, you know, Illinois and see what they go." He goes, "They have inspections here." You know, he goes, "Back in West Virginia, when we built a house, you know, nobody came and inspected anything. You got people who did, you know, good enough kind of work. That's good enough. And he said, you know, the last time they built a house in West Virginia, that, you know, his wife was taking a bath in the, when they've just moved in, taking a bath in the upstairs bathroom, and it fell through the floor. Evidently didn't think to use, you know, plywood as a subfloor. Not making that up. But again, this is one of those things where you create an environment where it's all about the cheapest price, you end up getting people who are going to cut corners. You know, he was saying, you know, there's a crawl space under the house that they have to, you know, to get into the plumbing and everything, because they don't have basements in North Carolina, because it's all sand. And he goes, you know, in West Virginia, they just, you know, put a piece of plywood up against the wall. And, good enough. He goes, there's actually a door with a lock. And they've actually sealed it so that the critters don't go in and out. And it was one of those things where I've always been in an environment where that's been possible, where that's been the reality, because we have regulations, we have inspections, we have people who, and you may go, oh, those are job killers. Oh, those are such a pain in the neck. But what they do is they make sure that when you take a bath, when your wife takes a bath, she's not falling through the floor. Now, how many times have we heard the story where, you know, the dad and the kid are out in the yard playing football and the dad throws the ball a little close to the house and the kid runs right through the house because, oh, they didn't do what they were supposed to do. They just slapped up the siding and didn't have any sheathing or anything. How many times have you heard that? Again, it comes back to, we need to have skilled people doing the best job and accountability on top of it. And this is where the prevailing wage thing, and this is one of those things that I think is really important. The prevailing wage law, and I go back to Jim Justice, governor of West Virginia, who did. They went and they passed the whole no rights at work agenda. They attacked collective bargaining rights. They attacked prevailing wage. They went after workers' comp, unemployment. They went after all of it in the hopes and prayers that it was going to, like manna from heaven, create this environment of prosperity, when the reality is West Virginia has been being robbed for generations as the coal barons and the wealthy have been just screwing that state over with poison, with bad ideas like ending collective bargaining rights and all of that. And they sell it to us like, oh, it's going to be good for us. Here where I'm at in Pennsylvania, there's literally a movement of people who say we need to get rid of prevailing wage because it's going to lower the cost. It's going to lower the cost. I love this. It's going to lower the cost of building a school by 25%. I've actually had someone on this program several years ago. No, it's going to save 25% of the cost of that school by just doing away with this prevailing wage thing. And I'm going, you do realize the majority of the cost in building a school is in materials, right? And in architectural work and all of that. The labor costs like 20 to 23%. So if I'm getting your numbers right, to save 25% on building that school, those workers would literally have to pay you for the privilege to work on that project, if your math is right. Because again, it's the poison they keep pushing us. Now, what he meant to say, and I know what he meant to say, by cheating those workers out of that prevailing wage, we can cut their wages by 25%. We can cut what goes into their pockets and in their paychecks and into their families and into their local communities by 25%. That's what he meant to say, but without saying it. That's one of those moments where you don't say the quiet thing out loud, but you still want to say it. Oh, we're going to save all this money. Oh, well, where does that money come from? Oh, that's right. It comes from the workers' pockets. It comes from the community's pockets. Because understand, that money that worker puts in his pocket locally, he spends locally. That's right. Goes to the little town square. And we've seen this. There have been studies, numerous studies out there. This is irrefutable. They spend the money locally. It reverberates in the local economy. And you have a snowball effect of good things. When you steal that 25%, you take money away from people. What do you think happens? That's right, the other side. Yeah, it goes the other way. This is, again, why we need to fight for these things and expand prevailing wage protections to more working people. Just my thoughts. But again, you got to give them credit. They keep trying to screw over working people, and sadly, some of us keep buying it. I hope you're not one of them. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you got a defense, I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, Download the podcast. Wherever you get yours, you'll find ours, from iTunes to iHeart, Stitcher to Podbean, everywhere in between. That's where we'll be found. Great to be back. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.